The birthdays were awesome tonight. We started the Big Book over for the 10th time on Wednesday night, and we covered part of Doctor's Opinion last week, and that's where we are tonight. Before I start, I'm going to ask God to set aside everything I think I know, God, about you, the steps, recovery, the Big Book, what's best for me, what's best for others, especially let go of all my old ideas so I can live in your truth. Amen. So just a few things. If you can make it Saturday, we're going to look at the how and why of the third step and the third step promises. If you haven't studied that or heard that, please join us at 9:15. It's going to be special. And we'll look at the third step prayer. And then on Saturdays, we'll be going through subsequently all the steps in great detail for those who are new and want to do four-step. We'll show you exactly the instructions in the Big Book. On Sunday night, we finished working with others, which is the instructions on the 12 steps, and we finished that for the, I can't remember how many times we've done it on Sunday night. This Sunday, if you can join us, I have something special planned. So if you can come at 6, we're going to cover some great stuff. And so I'll have a handout, and if you can join us at 6, you'll get a lot out of it. Anything else? We have the website experiencethebigbook.org. I just posted a new one today. And let's look at Doctor's Opinion now. We covered XXVIII last week in XXIX. Since Jimmy's not here, he told me I could review. And what I'm going to review is two paragraphs that we covered that every alcoholic must understand. I say must. I mean, you're not going to do the deal that John's talking about unless you understand these two paragraphs, because they describe our hopeless situation. Now, we have a hopeless situation. Does anybody believe that? Well, it is without God, without the steps, and that's what John was saying. We have a hopeless condition unless I have help, and it can't be me. So we're going to read on XXVII. It says, we believe, this is Dr. Silkworth, and he didn't sign it, remember, in the first edition because he was writing his opinion, and this was written in 1939, and people didn't know what was wrong with us. And he explained alcoholism, the disease of alcoholism, in these next few pages. I always want to leave time for discussion, so we're not going to finish. I don't think we'll finish the chapter this week. We're in no rush, are we? No. It says, we believe, which means he believed, and he suggested a few years ago, remember he wrote this in 1938, that the action of alcoholic on chronic alcoholics is manifestation of an allergy. An allergy, an allergic reaction. Now, what does that allergy mean? It means an abnormal reaction to something. So we have an abnormal reaction to alcohol. Does anybody believe it? And what is it? It's called the phenomenon of craving. It's a phenomenon because it cannot be explained. They may come up with the biochemical reasons, but it's limited to this class and never occurs in the average tempered drinker. Now, craving means that once you put alcohol in your body will make you take a second drink. Has anybody had that happen in your life? In fact, you know it's going to happen, so alcoholics don't buy like one beer, right? Why would an alcoholic buy one beer? Because you know you're going to have a second one, because you know what happens. You know what happens. It's a craving. Your body craves something. Craving means that it's a desire that has to be fulfilled that you have no power against. And it only occurs in alcoholics. Average people don't have this. So some people say they're alcoholics, they're addicts, alcoholics. If you have alcoholic addiction, which we have, that's what he said in the previous page, remember? We have alcoholic addiction. We are addicted to alcohol. And it causes a craving. And other drugs cause craving too. And so it never occurs in the average drinker. That's why my wife can have one drink. In fact, she didn't drink her wine last night. It's $8. What the hell's wrong with her? I don't even notice, but she said, I'm going to finish it. I said, well, okay, honey. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. This means if you're an alcoholic, you cannot drink alcohol. You have no power once alcohol is in your body. Does everyone understand that? Everybody agrees with that.
Yep.
So it says, once having formed the habit, now form the habit means the loss of control once you take alcohol. So once you have that habit, and you find you cannot break it, so you cannot control how much you drink, even though you try. You say to yourself, I'm just going to have one tonight, right? Or two. And then the next morning, you don't even know what happened. You're in the grass, right, with your car total. Once having lost their self-confidence, why would you lose your self-confidence? Because how can you be confident about yourself when you know you can't control how much alcohol you drink? Now, they're talking about your body here. This is what's wrong with all of our bodies. You can't rely upon things human because you cannot keep from taking more alcohol once it's in your body. And then problems pile up. Anybody have problems when you come in here? And they become astonishingly difficult to solve, especially if you can't stop drinking, right? So that's what's wrong with the body, and it's called control, lack of control. And it only occurs after alcohol is in your body. So you'll hear people say, well, I've been craving a drink. You can't crave a drink if it's not in your body. Craving is after you take the first drink. Now, does anybody have the phenomenon of craving in this room? All right, the solution is very simple. Don't drink, right? Isn't that what Nancy Reagan says? Just say no. Yeah, well, that got us another week in the Seder Solemn, right? So then here's the next paragraph. Go to the bottom of the page. Now he's going to tell us what's wrong with our minds and why we can't not take the first drink. Now, if you can stop drinking and not take the first drink, you don't need to be in AA. Just don't drink. But it says men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. Now, it doesn't say that men and drink because they like alcohol. They like the effect. In fact, men and women would drink anything if it had the effect that alcohol does. It just, alcohol happens to work for alcoholics. But if you find anything else that will produce that effect, you will get addicted to it. That's why alcoholics usually can't take drugs, because it's going to have an effect on them, and then they'll either start drinking again or they're going to abuse the drugs. And drug addicts, if they can't get their drugs, they'll start to drink. And then a lot of them have the phenomenon of craving, and then they'll end up back on the drugs. So it's suggested that you have abstinence from alcohol and drugs. Now, don't quote me at New York and say, doctor said this. Well, I don't care what they think. I'm just telling you, anything that on me, I can't tell you about you, anything that will change the way I see the world is dangerous for me. Now, and in fact, things that don't even change the world, I know I can't just take one pill. Like, I need two Tylenol, because you understand. I'm an alcoholic addict. One Tylenol is not going to work for me. All right, nobody thought that was funny, but you understand what I'm saying, right? We're alcoholic. Yeah. And so the effect of alcohol does something to us. It doesn't matter, and it produces an effect which becomes addictive in where? In your mind. So the effect causes an addiction in your mind. The drug alcohol causes a craving of your body. And it says the sensation is so elusive that while they admit it's injurious, you know, well, shouldn't have done what I did last night, right? They cannot, after time, differentiate the truth from the false. They can't see the truth about alcohol before they drink it. They can't say, gee, I better not have this drink because I have the phenomenon of craving and I'm not going to stop. You don't say that. Nobody does that, right? You don't go to the liquor store and say, I'm an alcoholic and I have a phenomenon of craving, so I'm just going to get one drink, right? No, it never happens. And it says we can't, our alcoholic life seems the only normal one. It seems normal to us but to other people, we look insane, right? We have these bad things happen to us. We swear we're never going to drink, and then the next night we're drinking. And anybody sees that says, there's something wrong with this person. Well, there is, and here's what it is. You're restless, irritable, and discontented. Now, restless, irritable, discontented means that when you're sober, if you're an alcoholic, you don't like the way things are. and they'll never be good enough. You're in conflict. Restless means you can't, you can't be settled down. Discontented means you're not happy with the way things are. Irritable means you're pissed off, you're angry, and you can be depressed, anxious, upset. You get the picture? So sober, we don't like the way we feel. Now, John described how he never felt good. And I'm like John. I was an alcoholic when I was born because I never felt okay. I never felt a part of. I always felt separated from, and I wanted approval constantly. And I once I took a drink, everything worked. Everybody got nicer. The world got better. And then I had the phenomenon of craving. Now, I got that when I was 13 years old at a Passover Seder, drinking Manischewitz wine. In fact, I was getting excited because Annie and I were talking about it, that sweet, terrible wine. I said, boy, this is good. It's really good. And I kept going upstairs and getting more. I didn't understand it, but it made me feel really good. And so I had it from the first drink. It made the world different. It made me feel okay. Has it done that for you?
Yep.
Now, anything that does that affects our mind. Now, here's what happened to me. I don't know about you, but I have a part of my mind that's damaged. It's really damaged, and it cannot be fixed. I don't know if you can see it on CT scans, but it's here. It's somewhere in here. And I know that if I take alcohol, I'm going to get a sense of ease and comfort. You see what it says? As soon as I take a drink, I'm going to feel better. Now, my mind knows that. So then my mind will tell me, okay, Michael, you know, you need a drink. Why? Because I don't feel okay. And even if I feel great, I'll need to celebrate. Because my mind will say, you'll feel better. So I could never arrange the world so that I felt okay and I didn't need that drink. Anybody relate to that? Because, and my mind was damaged. So even though I knew, I swore, I'm never going to drink again, and I know I have the craving, my mind would tell me it's okay to drink right before I would do it. Now, so that means that we don't go in the liquor store and you say, you know, I'm irritable, restless, and discontented, and I'm separated from God, and I'm self-centered, and I'm having a bad day. Can you give me a bottle? We don't do that. We don't even realize it, but that's what happens. So sober, without alcohol, my mind is damaged and it tells me that it's okay to drink. Why? Because once I get that idea of alcohol, I sense the ease and comfort, and then I can only think what it's going to do for me, not to me. And once my mind starts thinking of what it's going to do for me, nothing is going to come between you and the drink or drug. That's been proven, guaranteed. And so then I drink, and then guess what? I succumb to the desire, it says. The phenomenon of craving develops. I'm screwed. And then I pass through the well-known stages of a spree. And then I emerge remorseful. Anybody emerge remorseful? Anybody have a firm resolution not to drink again? Anybody believe it? Yes, if we took lie detector tests of everybody in here after they had one of their nights, and we did that, they would pass it. They would absolutely convince the guy that they were never going to drink again. And then, 2 hours later, he's drunk. Now, why? Because we believe it. But our mind can't see the truth about alcohol. Once that idea gets in, that area is damaged and it cannot be fixed. There's no pill you can take. There's no therapy. Triggers, you can trigger your life away. You're not going to prevent your mind from drinking once it decides it wants it, right? So what is a trigger for an alcoholic? Breathing. I mean, seriously, if people who talk about triggers don't understand the disease. We can't live sober in the world without seeking the ease and comfort of alcohol. If we could, we wouldn't drink. And then we do that, and it goes over and over, and it says, I have to experience an entire psychic change if there's any hope of recovery. Psychic change means change in the way I react to life, the way I see things, the way I live my life. And what they're talking here is about the spiritual solution that the steps give us with our relationship with God. and we live a God-centered life, not self-centered life, and God is the one who gives me the choice not to drink. So let me say this. I never have the choice on my own not to drink again. I've been sober a long time. I don't have the power of choice not to drink today. So why didn't I drink? Well, I didn't drink because I have a relationship with God. And I seek God today. And God is the power that gives me the choice. And people don't understand that. Once I think that I have the power of choice and I'm going to work these steps so I'll have the power of choice, I'm screwed. Because I have no power. The power comes from God. We don't teach that enough in AA. And so all our job is to seek the power that gives us the choice. Now, we said God could and would if he were sought, right? Mm-hmm. Maggie read it beautifully. Can and will. He can and will help me see the truth about alcohol if I seek him. Guaranteed. So the steps are how we seek him. So I reviewed that, and I'm just going to cover a couple more paragraphs. So here's the key. So we've read why we're screwed, right? We have craving, and our mind's damaged, and we can't live sober and not want to drink. It says, on the other hand, strange as this may seem to those who do not understand. Now remember, when this book was written, nobody knew this. Once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed. See, we seem doomed and we seem hopeless, right? But we're not. There is a solution. Now, before this book was written, nobody knew that. Now remember the foreword to the first edition. What does it say? The first words that were written, Alcoholics by AA founders. It says, we have recovered from a seemingly hopeless condition of mind and body. And this book is the specific directions on how they did this. So that's why I think this is an important book for me. Because my directions won't help me. So it says, once the psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol. I think that's the best definition of what they mean by recovered alcoholic. What do you think, Ed? Seemingly able to control our desire for alcohol. I can do that today. But I can do that today because I've been doing the steps today. I prayed today. I asked God into my life. I'm here today. I've been working with others. The only effort, now if you want that, does anybody want to recover? No. Anybody? Good. It says the only effort, and it says necessary. It doesn't say you might want to do this. And they don't ask you what you think about it. The only effort necessary being that required, notice the words necessary and required, follow a few simple rules. So it's not only necessary, it's required, and you have to follow this. And the rules are the steps. It's very simple. So these are very important paragraphs, these three paragraphs, right? The body, the mind, and then the solution is to follow these steps to God and get a relationship with God. And then I want to go down, I'll just read the next few paragraphs and then we'll cover the rest next week. Men have cried out to me in sincere and despairing appeal, Doctor, I cannot go on like this. I have everything to live for. I must stop, but I cannot. You must help me. Anybody thought that? Well, I've had people said that and they come here. And they sit over there and they come to me after the meeting and say, this is the greatest meeting I've ever seen. I've learned so much. You're so wonderful, blah, blah, blah. All that crap. So I say, well, good. Come Saturday at 9:15. You know what they say? I can't get up that early. You see alcoholism? See how it works? But people who really, really want to get better, who really feel this way, God will send the right people. If you have a sincere desire, and what I did was I got down on my knees and I said, God, help me. And I'm here today. It's a miracle. It says, the doctor, if faced with this, understands your inadequacy. And he wrote, one feels that something more than human power is needed to produce the change. He understood that. He worked with 5,000 alcoholics. He understood he had no power to change. Now, Dr. Young, who gave the solution to Roland Hazard in Switzerland in 1933, which the solution to Roland said, you know, he got drunk after a year of therapy. He had a whole year of therapy with the best psychiatrist in the world. And the psychiatrist said, you're okay. And he said, I understood my mind perfectly. That's dangerous. He leaves Switzerland. He's drunk in 3 days. He comes back and he tells the doctor. Doctor says, I didn't realize you're an alcoholic. Well, we don't tell him everything, right? We don't want him to know, really, about our drinking. And he says, you have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. He's never seen a case recover. It's hopeless. But here's where we got the solution. He said, except he's seen these rare cases where people had this whole spiritual rearrangement of their personality, and they were able to quit drinking. So Roland says, well, I go to church. He says, that's not what we're talking about. Something has to be changed, a rearrangement of the way your attitudes and outlook on life, the way you see things. And that's where AA got the solution. And then the Oxford group had the steps to get that. And so you see the world differently today. John sees the world differently today. And he doesn't have to drink today. And so he understood that. And he wrote at the bottom of the pack, many types do not respond to the ordinary psychological approach. Well, I looked that up. It's the usual, you know, analyzing yourself, thinking it through, understanding. In the big book, it says over and over, self-knowledge won't fix this. And he says, I do not hold with those who believe that alcoholism is entirely a problem of mental control. We look insane, don't we? But then he talks about, at the bottom, people will take a drink, and then they have the phenomenon of craving. And then when he says, when that happens, these men are not drinking to escape on the next page. They're drinking to overcome a craving beyond their mental control. So somebody will have one drink, and then they're off and running. Now, some people were binge drinkers. And I've worked with some of them, I wasn't. They'll start drinking, and they'll drink till they're almost dead. They stop because they cannot keep the alcohol in their body anymore. They sober up. They'll come to meetings. They love AA. They try to work the steps. And then that day will come, sober. They'll start drinking again. The same thing happened. So once they get in their body, they get that craving. And so, and it says, there are many situations which arise out of the phenomenon of craving which cause men to make the supreme sacrifice rather than continue to fight. And people do die of this disease, and people do commit suicide. And then he talks about the types of alcoholic. I'm going to skip that, and I'm going to cover this next, where it says all these. You see where that is in the book, on XXX. All these types have one symptom in common. So we all have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. Now, why does he emphasize this? Because if you have this, and you cannot see the truth about alcohol sober, you need help beyond you, right? You can't fix this, and AA is giving you this solution. It says, it has never been by any treatment with which we're familiar permanently eradicated. The only relief we have is to suggest its entire abstinence. And it says, this immediately precipitates us into a seething cauldron of debate. General opinion seems to be that most alcoholics are doomed. I'd like to leave time for discussion, but I think we should finish the next few paragraphs. Is that okay? It ties it all together. What is the solution? Perhaps I can best answer this by relating one of my experiences. He said, 1 year prior to this experience, now the solution I already told you is not to take the first drink, but we can't do that, right? So he says, 1 year prior to this experience, a man was brought in to be treated for chronic alcoholism. He had a gastric hemorrhage, had a case of pathological mental deterioration. Any of those in the room? Probably don't want to admit it. He had lost everything worthwhile in life and was only living, one might say, to drink. Was anybody there? Anybody remember that? See, at the end, we just drink constantly, right? And it's a deadly cycle. He frankly admitted and believed that for him there was no hope. Following the elimination of alcohol, he had no permanent brain injury. He accepted the plan outlined in this book, but they forgot to write, and he did it. You see, he did it. And then a year later, he came to see him, and he had a strange sensation. He couldn't even recognize the man. From a trembling, despairing, nervous wreck, it emerged a man brimming over with self-confidence and contentment. And I'm going to stop there. And you see that when we celebrate birthdays, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we see John today, and he looks great, but we didn't see him 33 years ago. Ed looks good too, but we didn't see him. But the beauty, if you come to AA, is I've seen people here celebrate birthdays that I remember their first day. And they look so much better. And they look so much happier. And so you see it, and then if you're new, then you'll want to do it, right? And so we are the best example of what the big book can do. And so we're to be an example of, if you do this, this is what you'll have. Remember, if you want what we have and are willing to go to like that, then you're going to take the steps. So I'll open it up, and then we'll finish the chapter next week, and we'll start Bill's story, okay? Thanks, guys.